Okay, yeah.
Okay, this week is Asara Bitteves Friday. Asara Bitteves is one of the four fast days. It's one of the four fast days that commemorate and that are associated with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, with the destruction of the Temple in Jerusalem, and with the Jewish people being forced to go into exile. The source for these four fast days is a pasuk in Zecharia, in Tre Aser. Pasuk says, Tzomer Revi, the fast day of the fourth month. Fourth month being from Nisan, because Nisan is the first month. So that's Shavasa B'Tammuz. The fourth month from Nisan is Tammuz. And Shavasa B'Tammuz, the 17th of Tammuz, is a fast day because that day is associated with the event of the Romans, and according to some, the Babylonians, penetrating the perimeter of Jerusalem, breaking through the walls of Yerushalayim. And Vitzoma Chamishi, and the fast of the fifth month, that's Tisha B'Av, because that's associated with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and the fire that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash was lit on the ninth of Av. B'Tzom HaShvi'i, the fast of the seventh month, that's the fast of Tzom Gedalia. After the Romans took over Jerusalem, conquered Jerusalem, and expelled many of the Jews to Babylonia, they did allow for some form of Jewish self-government. And Gedalia, who was a tzaddik, a righteous person, was appointed the governor, the Jewish governor in Jerusalem. And he was assassinated. And because of the assassination, it was unfortunately by Jewish people, but because of the assassination that of Gedalia, the Jewish people lost all control in terms of any form of self-rule. And great catastrophes happened as a result of this tragedy, which aroused the anger of Babylonia. And Vitzom HaAsiri, the fast of the 10th month, Teves being the 10th month. So that commemorates, there is a discussion in the Gemara, what it commemorates. But we paskin that it commemorates mainly, might commemorate other things also, but the main commemoration is the encircling of Jerusalem by the Babylonian army. And now these fast days, when they should fall out on a Shabbos, are postponed to Sunday. However, there is an opinion, and that is the opinion of Advudram, that while it's true, Tisha B'Av that falls out in Shabbos is postponed to Sunday. Shavasu B'Tammuz, the 17th of Tammuz, that falls out on Shabbos is postponed to Sunday. Tzom Gedalia, the fast of Gedalia, when it falls out in Shabbos, is postponed to Sunday. But Asara B'Teves, if it should fall out in the Shabbos, is not postponed to Sunday. Now, in truth, the way we have the calendar set up, it is not possible for Asara B'Teves to fall out in Shabbos. Asara B'Teves can fall out on a Friday, as it does. But it does not fall out on the Shabbos. But prior to the institution of the calendar by Hillel Hasheni, when the new months were declared on the basis of the sighting of the moon, it was possible for Asara B'Teves to fall out in Shabbos. And the Avudram's opinion is that when Asara B'Teves would fall out in Shabbos, the halacha was that it was not postponed, and they fasted on Shabbos. And the question is, why is it that way? And the Avudram somewhat addresses the question, and he says, because besides the pasuk in Zechariah that mentions the four fast days, there is a pasuk in Yechezkel in which the Navi is told to write down this day. Sod l'cha esa yom hazeh. Ves etzem hayom hazeh. And the essence of this, you know, ki be etzem hayom hazeh, because in the essence of this day, the king of Babylonia surrounded Jerusalem. Now, the word etzem hayom hazeh in the Navi is used in regard to Asara B'Teves. And in the Torah, it's used in regard to Yom Kippur. And we know when Yom Kippur falls out in Shabbos, we fast anyway. So Asara B'Teves, the opinion of the Avudram is that we would fast anyway if Asara B'Teves would fall out on the Shabbos. And most of the Rishonim clearly disagree with the Avudram. Right? The Beis Yosef says that that Rashi disagrees. It seems clear that the Shulchan Aruch disagrees. It seems clear that the Rambam disagrees. But that is the opinion of the Avudram. And in a sense, it's based on the wording of the pasuk, whether it's a gzera shava, literally, which presents certain problems, or it's the explanation of the pasuk. The point is, there is a lesson that the Navi, who instituted the fast of Asara B'Teves, is trying to tell us. Why should Asara B'Teves, which is identified with the Babylonians encircling Jerusalem, be more stringent in this regard than Tisha B'Av, which commemorates the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? Now, and we have to understand to a large degree, what is it that Avudram compares Asara B'Teves to Yom HaKippurim? What is it about Yom HaKippurim that is the foundation and the basis for the fact that Asara B'Teves, according to the Avudram, should be a fast day even when it fell out on Shabbos? Now, the Gemara in Megillah mentions, at first the Gemara, but the Gemara tracks back from it. But the Gemara in Megillah at first suggests that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rebbe, the author of the Mishnah, to a certain degree in his time, even though it was like 100 years after the Korban, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wanted to take away the fast day of Tisha B'Av. He felt, the Gemara says, that it would be better not to fast on Tisha B'Av. Then the Gemara says that that wasn't the situation, and he was only, Tisha B'Av fell on Shabbos, maybe it shouldn't be postponed to Sunday, but even that, the Chachamim didn't accept. But initially, the Gemara said that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wanted, in his day, 100 years after the Korban, to make the fast day of Tisha B'Av not the day that was required to fast. And Tosfos asked the question, how is it possible that the Gemara could have thought of such a possibility? The Gemara talks very much against those who don't fast on Tisha B'Av and don't mourn on Tisha B'Av, and speaks in positive terms about those who do on Tisha B'Av, who do mourn and do fast. So how could the Gemara have thought, even for one moment, that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wanted to declare in his day, approximately 100 years after the destruction, perhaps a little less, of the Beis HaMikdash, that the fast day of Tisha B'Av was no longer a requirement? And Tosfos says that never dawned on Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Tosfos has a number of two explanations, but I'm discussing one of them. And the Gemara at first wanted to suggest that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi wanted the fast day of Tisha B'Av, of the ninth of Av, to be the date to be changed to the tenth of Av. And the Gemara mentions that Rabbi Yochanan, Tosfos mentions that the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan said that had he been there at the time of the Korban, at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, he would have suggested that Tisha B'Av, the fast day commemorating the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the burning of the temple, should be on the 10th of Av and not on the 9th of Av. Why is that? Because the fire that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash was lit shortly before sunset. And most of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash took place after sunset, after the new day. When it burned the whole next day, the 10th of Av. So since the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash took place on the 10th of Av, so he would have suggested that the Tisha B'Av be observed, the Gemara thought at first, on the 10th of Av. And then the Gemara said, but Rabbi Yochanan didn't suggest it. Why? Because Rabbi Yochanan wasn't there at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Neither was Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who was the teacher of Rabbi Yochanan. So how could the Gemara have thought? So we see that even though Rabbi Yochanan thought that there would have been a logic to observe Tisha B'Av on the 10th of Av, nevertheless, in view of the fact that so many years passed since the Churban, since the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, it's proper to keep it on the 9th of Av. So why did the Gemara think originally that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wanted, according to Tosfos, to change the date from the 9th of Av to the 10th of Av? After all, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, all right, was older than Rabbi Yochanan, but he wasn't there at the time of the Churban. And they observed the 9th of Av for many years prior to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's time. So why did he want to change it? Now, when we focus on the holiday, on the fast day of Tisha B'Av, Tisha B'Av has a double element to it. On one hand, it's a day of avelus. It's a day of mourning. On the other hand, we mourn the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. We mourn the loss of Yerushalayim. We mourn the fact that the Jewish people had to go to exile. But it's also a day of tzaka. It's a day of crying out to God for help. I think my uncle writes that Tisha B'Av at night and Tisha B'Av in the morning, when we focus on Kinos, there the main perspective is mourning. Kinos has to do with mourning. Kinos is not Slichos. There was a time where, according to some opinions, the kinos was combined with slichos. Slichos is crying out to God for help. Kinos is a cry of mourning. And Tisha B'Av has that double element. But in accordance with our practice, Tisha B'Av at night and Tisha B'Av in the morning focuses primarily on mourning. Tisha B'Av at Mincha, when we lay in Bayichal and we call out the Midos, we refer to God as a Kel Rachum B'Chanon, and we're appealing to God to help us to forgive our sins, to restore the Jewish people to the situation they had before when they were in Eretz Yisrael, when the Beis HaMikdash was built. So we lay in Bayichal. But Tisha B'Av has this double element. Tzaakah. Tzaakah is crying out to God for help. And Avelus, mourning, is crying. It's a cry of, not of desperation, but it's a cry because of what happened. And this is, I think, what The question is, what should it be, the ninth of Av, or should it be the tenth of Av? If we focus in deciding the day on the basis of crying out, we cry out when the tragedy is beginning. You don't cry out for help when a person is already dead. When you cry out for help when a person already died, you are not crying out for that person. At best, you're crying out for yourself. But the cry that you cry when a person dies, that's a cry of mourning, not a cry for help. And so the ninth of Av represents the beginning of the tragedy, the danger. The Beis HaMikdash was not yet destroyed. There might have been some damage, but it was not destroyed yet. But the tenth of Av, most of the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And the tenth of Av, that's when the Avelus, if we set the date on the basis of Tzaka, of crying out to God, the most appropriate time would be the ninth of Av. But if we cry out, if we set the date on, if we set the date on the basis of mourning, the most appropriate time is the tenth of Av. Unfortunately, today, people try to start, instead of crying out for help when the person is very sick, they already start their mourning situation. They try to, well, maybe better not to say. So So I think this is what the Gemara at first, why? Because Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, he had a very good relationship with Rome. After the Churban, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so there was tragedy, one tragedy after another. Rome oppressed the Jewish people. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi had a very good relationship with Caesar, with the king of Rome, with the Roman government, and the lot of the Jewish people improved. Consequently, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi felt that whereas up to that point, the main focus of Tisha B'Av should be on Tzaka and crying out for help, because the Jewish people were very desperate. But since the relationship with Rome changed, and now there was a good relationship, as the prince and the leader of the Jewish people, had a good relationship with Rome. So perhaps instead of focusing on Tzaka, on crying out to God for help, we should focus on Avelus, focusing on what we lost. But the Chachamim, even according to the Havamin of the Gemara, even according to what the Gemara initially thought, his colleagues, the sages of Israel, understood. They felt that the Jewish people, so long as the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt, the Jewish people are always in danger. You could have a good relationship, but the good relationship is only temporary. I mentioned that my grandfather would say, we say, Bakei Shalom v'Rodfeyu, which is commonly translated, search for peace and run after it. My grandfather would say, no, search out the peace and run after it. We can have what seems to be ostensibly peace. How many peace treaties did we have? How many ceasefires did we have? How many permanent ceasefires were declared? Chachamim said no. Tisha B'Av, yes, it's a day of Avelos. But even when things seem to be pretty good, the tzara is still there. Tisha B'Av has to be a day of tzaka, a day of crying out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well, even according to the Havamin of the Gemara. So therefore, even according to the Havamin of the Gemara, they said it has to be on the ninth of Av, when the danger first began. Now, the other fast days, besides Tisha B'Av, for the most part, they are tzaka. We don't say kinnis on Shavuos Matamas. We don't say kinnis on some Gedalia. We don't say kinnis even on a sar. We don't say kinnis even on a sar b'teves. But we cry out to God because these days that are associated with the churban, the chachamim declared them as days of tzaka, of crying out to God. Yes, there might be an element of avelus also. Only because the Avelis is necessary for the tzaka, for the crying out to God. It's only when we realize what we lost that we can cry out to God. But they're primarily days of crying out to God. But tzaka. There's a difference between avelus and tzaka. Avelus, where it's absolutely necessary, can always be postponed. Tzaka could also be postponed. But there is a greater hesitancy in postponing tzaka, because you don't know what tomorrow will bring. You don't know whether tomorrow you will have a chance to cry out to God. You have to seize the moment. When the trouble first begins, to cry out to God. But it's not only in prayer. But in taking action. On behalf of the safety of the Jewish people, we also have to seize the moment. We can't postpone. I was born shortly after the War of Independence. And I remember the sign I wore, but can't say I was too old to really comprehend what was going on. But the other wars I remember. And the Six-Day War stands out. Yes, there were many korbanos. Many people lost their lives during the Six-Day War. I remember was a senior in high school at the time. And they were talking, I don't know if it was true or it wasn't true, that they were preparing the playgrounds of schools as possible grave sites for those that they expected to be killed. Everybody was scared what the result of the Six-Day War would be. And, of course, we would have preferred that there not be a war. But nevertheless, Israel's victory was remarkable during the Six-Day War. Why? Because Israel made a preemptive strike. Nasser, Yimach Shemo, closed the Bay of Aqaba. And Israel went in. And in the course of 3 hours, destroyed the Air Force of Egypt. This was before there was an Iron Dome. Imagine what would have happened. But Iron Dome's for rockets. But in those days, it wasn't so much rockets that were sent. It was planes with bombs. Imagine what would have happened if they did not make the preemptive strike. Imagine what would have happened if the Egyptian Air Force was at full force. How many more Karbanos there would have been? And who knows to what extent we would have been victorious. But in the wars that came afterwards, to a large degree, because of the fear of the United States, and as I mentioned before, you can't always ignore the United States, but you can't always submit either. Because of the pressure of the United States, very often the United States tells Israel, wait. Wait till you're attacked first. And sometimes we're told that by Jewish officials in the United States government. Sometimes those in the United States government who play a role that causes many more Jews to be killed are unfortunately from the Jewish people themselves. Somehow, they're seeing themselves as Jewish is of secondary importance. And the truth of the matter is, by not allowing Israel to eliminate the threat before it happens, or the continuous threat even after it happens. And there was an incident at the end of the Six-Day War when Israel surrounded one of the Egyptian armies. And because of joint pressure from the United States and Russia, Israel was not allowed to attack the army, the Egyptian army. So because of that, there was a Yom Kippur War, where so many more people were killed. In other words, Sometimes we have to go in to prevent them from murdering us. They have demonstrated time and time again that they're not interested in peace. And they announce it publicly. But the United States seems to indicate, it's Israel that doesn't want the ceasefire. Look at the people on the college campuses. They blame Israel, even though Hamas says we are going to destroy the Jewish people. We will not make peace with them. We might sign a contract. They praise what October 7th, when they came into Israel on October 7th. They praised the barbarity. And then what is their argument? Oh, you overdid it. They only killed 2,000 people, 3,000 people. You only have a right to go in to kill 3,000 people. What is this, a game? A game of equal? What does that mean? That Israeli soldiers should go in and kill the exact same amount of people? Are they saying that we should adopt the barbaric approach of the Hamas terrorists who were supported by the Palestinians? It's been proven now that the Palestinians, many of the Palestinians accompanied them. That put children in the ovens and turned on the fire in front of their parents. That raped the women. So should Israel do the same thing? That would be vengeance. When Israel goes in, it goes in to eliminate the problem. To make sure it doesn't happen again. These fools or anti-Semites use a couple of words. Really, what it is we have to act like them. When we go to war, when Israel goes to war, when the Jewish people go to war, they don't go to war to attack. They don't go to war to kill. Did anybody hear of an Israeli soldier raping a woman in Gaza? We go in to prevent them from doing to us what they're planning on doing, what they say they're going to do, what the United States makes believe that they don't hear. So the idea of Tzaka is we have to seize the moment before they do it. And if it's after they do it, we have to make sure that they don't do it again. The Pasuk, Tzoros HaMidyanim, harass the Midianites, keep Tzorim HaMlechem, because they harass you. We're not doing it for vengeance. We're doing it for prevention. So when it comes to Tzaka, when it comes to crying out to God, you have to seize the moment. And this is something historically throughout our Golos that we often missed. The Tzaka. The seizing of the moment, I should say, because Tzaka, from the best on the best perspective, should be on at the moment. And Yosef, when he talks to his brothers, he tells his brothers, Mahalu, Maharu, hurry, quickly. Ba'alu es habi avi, ba'amar tamelav, ko'amar bincha Yosef, samani elahim la'adon, l'chol Mitzrayim, I'm a master of all Mitzrayim. Bring my father to me. Ridah Eli, come down to Yosef. Al Tamod. What does Al Tamod mean? Al Tamod means do not delay. And there's a discussion, but why the expression Al Tamod stand? Medrash Rabbah really asked that question. It should say, Al Tacher, don't postpone. Why expression Al Tamod? Do not delay, in the form of don't stand. But I think this has always historically been a problem of the Jewish people. The Jewish people were always content, and they thought they had security with the situation they were used to. There were so many pogroms in Europe, and they survived. See, even when Hitler, Yamach Shemo, waged his campaign in Europe, the Jewish people to annihilate the Jewish people. Many Jews didn't take it as serious as they should have. I'm not talking about those that couldn't get visas. I'm not talking about the period of time when no visas were available. But there was a false sense of security. Yes, it's bad. But we had pogroms before and we survived. So our attitude was to deal with the existing situation. We felt secure with the existing situation. But history changes. And as history moves on, as the years pass by, the circumstance change. I think the Al Tamod, you could perhaps read it into the times change, the situation change. Don't think what is the situation today will be the situation tomorrow. You have to seize the moment. The Jewish people never knew how to seize the moment. And this is perhaps, this is what the Asara B'Teves, Asara B'Teves is the first, historically, is identified with the first of the historical events that we make into a fast day because of the galus, because of the exile. It represents the Babylonians surrounding Jerusalem. So Asara B'Teves was set up by the halacha as a day that tells us about seizing the moment, because that is the represents the earliest historical event for which we identify with the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, with the going into exile. So it shouldn't be postponed, because we have to seize the moment right at the beginning. That's the lesson. It's true. The other fast days are also tzaka, are also crying out to God. But Aseret Teves represents the first moment more so than the other fast days. Consequently, the Navi, according to Rav Mudrim, says that we have to, even if it falls out on Shabbos, Aseret Teves, the fast day of the 10th of Teves, we fast on Shabbos to emphasize the significance of seizing the moment. And this was what Yosef was telling the message to Yaakov. Now is an opportune time. You don't know what's going to happen later. Redaylight, go down to me. Then he explains himself, because it was important for generations to know. Al Talmud. The United States tells us Talmud. But the Torah, Yosef tells us Al Talmud. The status quo is not enough. There's no security. Do not think the status quo will continue. Every time there was a peace agreement, irregardless of who was the guarantee, Carter made the Camp David Accords. And part of the agreement was, well, a little later, I'm sorry. Part of the agreement with the PLO was that they have to turn over the terrorists to Israel. Not once did they turn it over. Zechor Yom HaSolem. We can't be blind. And we have to know. There's an agreement today. We don't know. Not we don't know. We do know that tomorrow it'll be worthless. It's a piece of paper. There is no real guarantee. We'll see. Didn't Russia guarantee? Put Israel aside. Didn't Russia guarantee Ukraine their independence? It's a piece of paper. And the United States, okay, on and off, they also signed that piece of paper. Who is holding Russia responsible? And there should be a lesson here. My uncle discusses the difference between Yehuda and Yosef, and says he says there is sort of like a battle. I mean, actually, the Medrash Rabba says that a battle, contest, whatever you want to call it, between Yehuda and Yosef. Who is the king? Who is the leader? And each one has strengths. He says Yehuda's gvura represents strength. He's the Moshe Merucho. Yosef is the Chaser HaMa'ula. Yosef is the one who doesn't really make many mistakes. Yehuda makes mistakes. But Yehuda, as a result of mistakes, he's able to stand up again. And to a certain degree, that gave him more gvura, that gave him more strength. In other words, we have to recognize our mistakes when we look at the events of the past history. There were those who believed that just giving back territory will bring peace. After all, the United States guaranteed it. But we all see now what the facts are. affects the man from us to be able to stand up. We made a mistake. We recognize many Jews who previously said, when we'll get back territory, everything will be good. We won't have to be on guard anymore like we used to have to be. But we see that that never happened. So in a sense, we have to become like Yehuda. We have to do tshuva. Tshuva not in the sense that we meant to do something bad, but tshuva in the sense of changing our perspective and to recognize that we can't trust anybody. And when they come and attack us, it's not enough just to push them back because they're going to come again and again and again. In the present tense, they're constantly attacking us, harassing us. We have to come to realize that the more we give in to them, the more we give in to them, the more they're going to try to destroy us. It's only if we stand firm that we'll be able to ensure our safety. Our purpose is not vengeance, chas v'shalom, but our purpose is to save ourselves. It's a preventive measure. And if preventive measure causes them a lot of harm, it's their fault, not ours. We should be zocha that there should no longer be an ongoing threat against Klal Yisrael.
If anyone has any questions, please put them in the chat. I think it's a little interesting here, Rebbe, you gave a perspective from the Tzaka that we have to seize the moment. You mentioned years ago about the Shira of the Be'er, talking that's about right. The Shira from the perspective of Shira, we also have to seize the moment.
Az Yashir, that's right, Az Yashir. That's true, you know, they actually, on one hand, there's great tragedy here, but as a result of that tragedy, many Jews who did not focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help throughout their lives have become to recognize the need of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. People are putting on mezuzahs, tzitzis, and everything. We have to seize that moment. We have to make that spark that has been aroused in these Jews become a burning flame, an eish tamid.
This is a tough question. What's the status of the soldiers who unfortunately killed the three hostages? If it would have been in the time of Sanhedrin, would they have to go to Gullus? What would?
I don't think so.
Because do they? Is it like the din of killings of being Rodef, trying to save the Nirdaf?
It seems to me that's what war is all about. You know that it's one nation against the other. You don't view it as one person killing another person. And unfortunately, that's part of war. Part of war is going in. And that's what it is, you know.
Should Israel try to negotiate to free more of the hostages, or should they?
They certainly should negotiate to free more of the hostages, and they could enter negotiations, but they have to get some kind of assurance that will limit the ability of Hamas to to do again what they did previously.
And now some people are saying that similar to what they did with Arafat after Lebanon, that they forced him and his terrorists into exile, letting the Hamas leaders and a lot of the fighters go to some third country. Would that be an acceptable outcome or no?
I'm not a military person. Hard for me to evaluate the situation. But I'll say, even in Arafat's situation, the terrorism continued. He just was in a place where it became harder for Israel to go after him.
You've mentioned in previous Shurim about our need to push out anti-Semites who are in power.
Including Jewish anti-Semites.
So I think that, hold on, I don't understand this question. Okay, I don't see any other questions right now, so I thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for joining.